talk to him at 11. 2 Samuel 11. Or as Alistair Begg says, 2 Samuel 11. Do you know that in 2024, there have been 4 Texas pastors who have either resigned or fallen in adultery? 4 Texas pastors in 2024. It's sad for the pastor. It's more sad for his congregation, for his wife, for his children, for his grandchildren. You see the effects of this. Yeah, so many people are affected when one man falls. Pastor Adrian Rogers used to say, they called him Golden Throat. And he used to say this, sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay. Well, 2 Samuel 11 is meant to kick us off our couches of confidence and to arouse our affections. You've heard this 1,000 times if you've been in church more than 10 years. You have heard this story. But I want you to follow along with me tonight and pay close attention to the headings that I've given. Even better, the title of the message, which is The Wife of Uriah. You'll see why I make that title instead of Bathsheba. I call it The Wife of Uriah. You'll see why in a few minutes. Now, I want you to think about how fast David has gone from his concern for the ark of God, his kindness to Mephibosheth, remember he is Jonathan's son, to now this callous adultery and even murder. When David folded his arms and relaxed, he threw himself into the net of Satan. So this is a good lesson, a sobering lesson for people who are like David in the sense that you know God, you've been walking with God and His people for a long time. This lesson has the sober message that no one, I put this on your study guide at the very bottom, none of us are immune from temptation. None of us. And so we'll keep that in mind as we go through this. Let's just look at 1 through 5 first. You ready? Huh? 1 through 5. Here we go. 2 Samuel 11. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. And they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house that he saw from the roof a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful. And David sent and inquired about the woman. And one said, Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? So David sent messengers, and he took her. And she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she had been purifying herself from her uncleanness. Then she returned to her house. And the woman conceived, and she sent and told David, I'm pregnant. 1 through 5. I titled this little section, Prowling Around Behind the Pillars. Look at the little picture that I put on your study guide. You see David over there in the corner? Prowling Around Behind the Pillars. Now, in our previous studies together, it seemed like every time we opened the book of Samuel, first and now second, that every time we see David, he's running. You remember? Who was he running from? Who else? From God at times. From the Philistines, when he went over there with Goliath's sword. And he made like he was insane and they released him. Then he really ran. But notice what's different now. Now he's not running anymore. What's he doing? He's resting. He's resting. That's where 1 through 5 take us. Verses 1 through 5 describe for us the spirit of the text. What I mean by that is the mood of the text. So before we dive off into a narrative, an Old Testament narrative, you want to find out what is the structure of the text. How is this thing divided? You want to find out the substance of the reading in this narration, which would be what's going on, the guts of the whole chapter. And then it's important for you to find out what the mood of the text is, the spirit of it. And that's what's given to you in 1 through 5. It's not very exciting anymore, is it? It's rather somber. So that's the mood. Now the weather had improved. Look at the first sentence in chapter 11. In the spring of the year. This was the year, the time of the year, notice where the narrator tells us, when kings went out to battle. They went out to battle in the spring of the year because things had begun to thaw, the weather was more amiable, there was wheat and barley that was available for the soldiers on the battlefield. So this is a good time to go to war. It just seems like a good time to fight. It was the time of the year when kings went out to fight their enemies. This was David's royal duty. But what's David doing? He's folding his arms and resting on his royal couch. Now, God was with David while David pursued God, but now what's he doing? He's prowling around behind the pillars. The same, I think, can be said, watch this, about your marriage. If you're pursuing your spouse, your husband or your wife, you're pursuing them with loving affection, then God will protect your marriage. But when you stop and you begin to just rest and lay around and take things for granted, you're setting yourself up to throw yourself into Satan's net, just like David. So don't go prowling around. Look at verse 2. It appears that we find David stretching and yawning and prowling around behind the pillars of his palace. And from his vantage point, which is probably a very tall, very high palace balcony, he looks out and he sees a woman bathing. Now there's nothing here whatsoever that would describe Uriah's wife as being provocative in any way. She's not positioned herself at all so that she can be seen by the king. That is not what's going on. This is not her fault. It was very common. They didn't have running water in those days. So it was very common for people to bathe outside with some sort of burlap curtain or small rock wall around them where they would be modest enough to be able to take a bath or pour water over them outside. So he sees her across the city, and she is, as the narrator says, a beautiful woman who was bathing. Okay, he sees her, but he doesn't stop seeing her. He doesn't turn and move away. He doesn't leave. I used to have, we had just moved to South Carolina, and I had started back to school, and so I needed a computer, and we got this desktop computer with this giant monitor. And the boys were homeschooled. for the first couple of years or so. And I caught him on the internet one day looking at things they should not be looking at. And so I put a yellow sticky on there, something about guarding your eyes. And so I sent him a text today and said, do you remember where that scripture was where I put the yellow sticky on the big monitor on in Greenville on Oak Forest? They said, no, but we do remember that you always said to guard the gates of your eyes. I thought, yes, something stuck. So David saw her, but he didn't keep walking. He began to entertain his fantasy. What we feed our eyes will eventually rule our hearts. Now, who was she? How many times is the name Bathsheba mentioned in chapter 11? One time. Now, I want you to keep that in mind. The Bible refers to her as a woman. How many times is David's name mentioned in chapter 11? There's a blank there for you. 21. No, the whole chapter. Sorry. Yeah, good point. I should have put in there the whole chapter. Y'all are so picky. Come on. Yeah, what's the point times Bathsheba by name one time? Okay. Yeah, just simply put, it's not her fault. Right? That's y'all, if you'll start paying attention to the words of Scripture, I know that sounds oversimplistic, but I mean that. Pay attention to the words of Scripture because the author can only communicate to you with his words. There's no pictures here, right? You're at a level now where the Lord expects you to pick out these things and understand them. I mean, I think this is what he writes to the Hebrews in chapters 4, 5, and 6, that some of you ought to be teachers by now. So we ought to be able to notice that there's a reason for these particular words and how many times he mentions the name Bathsheba. What's most important is that you see she is the wife of Uriah. What's the point? She's taken. She's off limits. And if you pursue this, David, you're not going to just hurt your integrity. You're going to destroy the marriage. And eventually is going to destroy Uriah. How does that look to people? Well, keep that in mind. I think that David thought he can have whomever he wants at this point. Y'all, his affections have changed. It's obvious. And I'm going to take you back in a few minutes to the point where those affections changed and took another direction. And I think we can trace why he's like this right now, okay? Okay, which one? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's Proverbs 4:20 is another one. Jesus talks about the eyes in Matthew 5. Yeah, Micah's another good one. Well, she has not positioned herself in any provocative way. And next, David acts upon his mental fantasy. And then sin gives birth to more and to more sin. After calling her to his palace, he was with her. She returns to the palace with the words David never wanted to hear. The pregnancy test came back positive. The baby is yours. Well, let's keep reading. 6 through 13. 6 through 13 is, notice this title, wash your feet and enjoy a little wine. Why don't you? Let me see if you can pick that up. So David sent word to Joab. Joab would be something like you would call a general. A general out on the battlefield. It's his, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." Joab sent Uriah to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked how Joab was doing, how the people were doing, and, "Hey, how's the war going?" And then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." Uriah went out of the king's house, and there followed him a present from the king. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord and did not go down to his house. When they told David, Uriah didn't go down to his house. David said to Uriah, "Have you not come from a journey? Why did you not go down to your house?" Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah dwell in booths, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are camping in the open field. Shall I then go to my house and to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? As you live and as your soul lives, I will not do this thing." David said to Uriah, "Well, stay here today, and tomorrow I'll send you back." So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. And so David invited him. Okay, look at this now. Well, that didn't work. That didn't work. Maybe I can get him loaded. And then once he's feeling pretty good, surely he wants to go home. David invited him. He ate in his presence and he drank so that he made him drunk. And in the evening he went out to lie on his couch with the servants of his lord. He did not go down to his house. All right, so wash your feet and enjoy a little wine. Notice what David does. In an effort to cover up his sin, he calls Uriah from the battlefield. Isn't that what we do? Not call anybody from the battlefield. Isn't that what we do when we get caught in our sin? We try to cover it up. Where did we learn that? Adam. We learned that from our parents, Adam and Eve. It says in Genesis chapter 3, verse 8, "And they heard the sound of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and the woman hid themselves from the presence of the Lord." Now, look at the contrast of where David is and where Uriah is. One is in the luxurious comfort of his palace. Where's the other? The other is serving his king, which is a very noble act to follow. So watch who's teaching us in 2 Samuel 11. Is it the man who's been after God's own heart? Or is it the no-name servant who's been on the battlefield? Isn't this crazy how God's story always does this turn? It just flips us on our head. It's like, what's going on here? And these people who are no-names begin to teach us. So I think he's a noble act to follow. Watch this. If David can get Uriah home and with his wife, then he thinks he can escape the blame of his wife's pregnancy. But don't you think this is all a little odd to Uriah? "Hey, Uriah, I'm David. How's it going?" Do you think Uriah thought, what's this all about? I thought I was coming home. You know, what's the big deal? Why have you called me here from the battlefield to..." Do you think Uriah suspects something at this point? Yeah, I'm with you. I'm thinking, yeah, he probably does. And what's up with this servant that's following after them with a present? "Here's a gift for you. It comes from the king. It's a little wine and cheese and some grapes. Go enjoy yourself." And watch what Uriah does. Does he go down to his house? Why does he not go down to his house? A little bit of insight to the context of this is that any soldier who was actively engaged in war we're all adults, have intercourse with his wife during battlefield. Jerry, you know this kind of stuff from being a soldier. So this was off limits. Notice where his allegiance is. His allegiance is to the king. And so we ought to admire this. But again, I thought, hey, how's it going, Uriah? This is kind of weird here. And I don't even think David waited for his answer. Like, how's it going? I don't think he waited to really find out, because he doesn't really care how Uriah is doing, does he? He just wants him to do what he wants to do to get the blame off David's shoulders. Yeah, so here's a little wine. What did wash your feet mean in that day? Well, another contextual kind of thing here that you need to know the background. Wash your feet is a euphemism. You know what that is? A pleasant way of saying something that's not so pleasant to hear. Wash your feet is go have sex with your wife. And so Uriah knows exactly what he means when he says, go wash your feet. And he denies it. He says, you know, no, I'm not going to do it. Now, I want you to describe for me in verses 9 through 13. Look down. I just read it. Just describe for me Uriah's nobility. Give me some things that you see there that describe his nobility. Of course, he refused to go to his house and to be intimate with his wife. What else?
Well, the statement that he said, as far as he said, how could I go and do that when my other, colleagues are not able to go?
Yeah, nobody else could come up here. They're all down there. Yeah. What else? 9 through 13. There's one real giveaway here that you don't. Yeah, boom. The ark. He's even talking about the ark. Where's David's interest in the ark? Who cares anymore? I got her on my mind now. Yeah, so notice that. What else? How else do you describe his nobility? Did the wine loosen him up? Nope. Yeah, he slept on the couch. Funny to me, this is the kind of stuff I'm thinking about, and I hadn't really teased it out, but I wrote this. It's kind of odd how the narrator tells the story of two men who slept on a couch. You know it? There's something there. I hadn't teased it all the way out, but one is God's king who commits adultery. The other is a mere servant of God who commits himself to integrity. I mean, I don't know if I'm right on with that, but there's certainly a contrast between the two. And the Bible's full of stories like this. The one that we least expect to rise to nobility are the heroes of the sagas. And those are people like the woman who comes to Jesus and washes his feet. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. These all describe the nobility of Uriah. Why do we pay attention to this? So that we'll be encouraged to see that the lowly and meek always win with God. Okay? He's there for you and me. Don't follow after the one that seems most obvious to follow. Follow after the one who's doing the will of God. Even though he may not even know who... I mean, he knows who God is, but may not be a follower or a believer. We don't know. We don't have evidence of that. But man, he certainly has character. Okay, let's move on. Find 14 through 27. And I worded it like this. Shake it off, stuff happens. Shake it off. Let me show you what I mean. 14. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. Time out. You getting this? We're privileged to the content of the letter. You ready? Uriah doesn't have privilege to the content of the letter. In the letter he wrote, set Uriah in the forefront of the hardest fighting and then draw back from him that he may be struck down and die. When Joab was besieging the city, he assigned Uriah to the place where he knew there were valiant men. And the men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the servants of David among the people fell. Uriah the Hittite also died. Then Joab sent and told David all the news about the fighting, and he instructed the messenger, when you finish telling all the news about the fighting to the king, then if the king's anger rises, and if he says to you, why did you go so near the city to fight? Did you not know that they would shoot from the wall Who killed Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal-sheth? Did not a woman cast an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebez? Why did you go so near the wall? Then you shall say, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. So the messenger went and came and told David all that Joab had sent him to tell. The messenger said to David, the men gained an advantage over us. They came out against us in the field, but we drove them back to the entrance of the gate. The archers fired at your servants from the wall. Some of the king's servants are dead, and your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. David said to the messenger, say this to Joab. Don't worry about it. That's how I interpret this. Don't worry about it. Shake it off. Stuff happens, Joab. Keep reading with me. Do not let this matter displease you, for the sword devours now one and now another. Strengthen your attack against the city and overthrow it and encourage him. When the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she lamented her husband over her husband. And when the mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house. She became his wife and bore him a son. Stop right there. You see where I got that? Shake it off. Stuff happens. That's his word back to Joab. All of that you see there in verse 21, all of that is something that the general Joab said to a servant who was taking the news back to the king, King David. And he's warning him that David might lose his temper. The guy's unpredictable, he's saying. And who knows what's going to happen when you go back. So tell him all of this stuff. And that's what we read in verse 21. And we find out David's response was not that he lost it. Notice that David, I think, is frustrated that Uriah just will not cooperate. So he writes this letter, sends it to General Joab. We get the contents. Uriah does not know what's in there. Can y'all describe what he's taking to General Joab? His death sentence, yeah. He's taking it to him. When Joab reads it, he sends Uriah probably to the city gate. Notice that the Bible says the command from the king is to send him to where the valiant fighters are. That doesn't mean Israeli forces. That means the strongest, the Navy SEALs of the Ammonites are fighting. Y'all get this picture? Here's little Joab. Everybody is pressing into the city gate. General Joab gives the command, and they all turn their backs and go the other way. Uriah is left. Jerry, what's this called? That's equal to court-martialing in today's terms. If that law was around, David would have been court-martialed and sentenced to death. This is a pretty serious deal. I'm on the phone this afternoon and reading this, and I'm texting Jason Spangenberg, you know, my bodyguard, the Marine dude. I'm just saying, what is this all about, and how would you guys view this? Just give us a little insight. If you're on the battlefield, Jerry, and you guys are pressing in, and everybody turned tail and ran and left you right there on the front.
Well, yeah, you never do that.
No.
And you would never do that to your men.
Never. Yeah.
And I don't think anyone would ever follow Joab again.
Correct. I mean, there's a saying among the soldiers, whatever branch of military you're in, you never, ever, ever, ever leave a soldier behind. No matter what. So this is pretty serious. Now, there is no way that Uriah will survive this. He's outnumbered because his friends were ordered to abandon him. He dies, the job is done, mission accomplished. The letter goes back to David. The messenger is warned by Joab that he might lose it. How did David respond? Verse 25. Verse 25, he says in East Texas 1970s kind of vernacular, tell Joab I'm cool with this. That's what he says. That's his response. It's okay. Don't get upset about this. Now, what happened? Is this the same guy who refused to touch Saul? Think about that. Is this the same David who just renewed his covenant with God in chapter 7? We just covered last. Where have all his affections gone? How much affection does David really have for Bathsheba? Think about that one. You can answer that. How much affection did he really have for Bathsheba? Zero. Yeah, she's just an act of his lust, his mental fantasy he's carried out. I mean, where is David when she's lamenting the death of her husband? Why isn't this man after God's own heart comforting her if he's so pastoral in nature? This is not good. Y'all, my questions are meant for you to conclude that this was a selfish act of lust that went way too far. Now that Uriah was taken out, no... Y'all are so good. What's the punchline of chapter 11? What verse? What's the punchline? Boom. Say it again, Christina. Let's read it together. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. Unquote. That's the punchline of all of chapter 11. Everywhere we've read up to this point, David, God has been with David. And it pleased the Lord that David did this. This is a turning point in the Bible. This is not just a story of lust or some topical study on adultery. That is not what this is about. This is about a man whose affections have been turned away from God. And I want to ask you, where did this begin? Because listen, your affections for God, you don't just lose them overnight. It is a steady drift away from God. You're shaking your heads because you know what it's like. All right, go further back. Go further back. Chapters. What happened to Uzzah? He died. Who could be ultimately responsible for Uzzah's death? Thank you. He knew the words of God. And at that point, I think, that nobody's told me this. I didn't read it in the book. I'm just going through what the Holy Spirit led me to believe. And that is, his affections changed then. That's important for you to hear. My specific audience on November the 13th, 2024. At First Baptist Church in Alba, where people have been members of a church for a very, very long time. Longer than I've been alive. This is important because your affections for God do not change overnight. It's like a cruise ship. It's not like a bass boat, right? Your affections are not like that where you can turn and avoid the stumps on Lake Fork, whatever. No, it's not like that. It's like a cruise ship. You turn it very slowly. And that's the way our affections are changed and they're drawn away. So keep this in mind. This is what's going on in David's life. I think that's where it began. But now, watch this. Now, chapter 6 has happened and Uzzah's dead and David could have prevented it. See, that was then. Now David's older. Now he's got his own pew in the sanctuary, if you will. Now David has a good name in the community. David thought he could rest. I'm sorry, this keeps hitting my collar. I won't ever wear this again. He thought he could rest, but he's not. This is what resting will get you. Watch this. In your old age. This is what resting gets you when you quit.
Idle hands are the devil's
word. None of us are immune from temptation. Watch over your heart with all diligence. Do I have any time just to close out with a couple of spiritual disciplines? I got like 6 minutes. Here we go. Number one, pray for yourself. I only have three of them. Three disciplines. Ready? Pray for yourself. Model the prayer life of Jesus. Mark 1:35. Early in the morning, while it was still dark, he arose and went to a desolate place. Remember that one? And there he prayed. Pray for yourself. Y'all, I've said this to you for 13 years. Don't know your strengths. That's nothing. Know what your weaknesses are. Know where you're most vulnerable. That's where the enemy's got you. Know your weaknesses. So pray for yourself. You're just as capable as King David of committing scandalous sins. So know your weaknesses. Number two, wrestle with your inappropriate affections. Let me just say this. This is just the pastor in me. If you struggle with some of this stuff that David struggled with, and it is rampant in churches today, if you struggle with this kind of thing, this is one of the advantages of belonging to a local church. You have people in the church that love you, who know you, and who care about you. So reach out to somebody and let them know that you got a problem. Come to me and talk to me. And in confidence, I'll find somebody gender specific for you that can keep you accountable for your wayward affections. Okay? We're all weak in some area. This is what makes the church work when we start reaching out for help to other brothers and sisters in the body. Okay? So wrestle with your inappropriate affections. When you lose control of affections, when your heart has more than one king, your laziness will affect more than you. Why does the narrator keep referring to Bathsheba as the wife of Uriah? Because she was taken, she belonged to Uriah. David busted up their marriage. He destroyed his relationship with Uriah. Moreover, David incinerated his integrity. What must General Joab must have thought? Joab thought about his commanding officer David. You think about that? Yeah. So my point is, what does Joab think of David? Y'all watch this. This is the kind of thing we need to be concerned about. When our affections have no guardrails and we act like we're just good with God and He's going to protect us, and you just follow out your fantasies and the lust of your eyes and your flesh, be careful, because you're not only destroying your integrity, you're taking your family down with you.
And these four pastors that you're talking about,
yeah,
here, they're not only, they're taking the unbelievers that were maybe just about to come.
Yeah,
here,
yeah,
alive.
Yeah. 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 No doubt. It was, but I would say to you, instead of elevating, it was a downward spiral to destruction.
We don't even know the ripple effect.
Yeah. Yeah. This Sunday, just a real quick, this Sunday I'm going to be in 1 John chapter 2, verse 28 through chapter 3, verse 3. A little short. We'll be out of here in 10 minutes on Sunday. I tried. I'll give it my best shot. But watch that passage, 2:28 and 29, tell us that when Jesus comes back, there are only two types of responses when He comes back, according to John 2:28 and 29. I'll give them to you. Confidence or shame? And you can fill those blanks in on Sunday in the bulletin. Confidence and shame. I want to be one of the confident ones, don't y'all? So wrestle with your inappropriate affections. And then finally, I won't even elaborate on this, but beware of a flabby heart. Beware of a flabby heart.